This is Back to Back.
Yo, what's up, Back to Backers? This is Willie Joy. Welcome to the show. This is Back to Back. This is my podcast. How are you? How we feeling this week? How are you doing? We're back. We're still here. I think I've said we're still here the last couple episodes, but man, in times like this, you got to check in, got to make sure we're all still existing. I'm doing all right. I'm feeling cautiously optimistic, at least here where I'm at in the United States. I mean, it is pretty great to watch the house of cards that has been built over the last 4 years finally start to crumble and fall. And for anyone out there who did anything, whether you voted, whether you talked to your friends, whether you talked to your family, reached out, donated anything, take a moment. We should all celebrate the power of our collective action. That's what we got to continue to celebrate. You know, the fight for progress is never over. It's not over now, but I hope everybody out there got to at least take a breath. Look, my guest on the show this week, a returning guest. I love talking to this guy. Matt Zoe is here. Matt Zoe's got a new album called Illusion of Depth that is out right now on Anjuna Beats, and it is amazing. Without hyperbole, it's easily one of the best albums of the year for dance music. And if you haven't heard it yet, that's a mistake. That's on you. It is truly a fantastic album. Matt and his team over at Mad Zoo, which is his record label, they've also been putting on a series of virtual festivals in Minecraft, which are really something special. Again, something unique, not like a lot of the other live stream events or virtual events you've been seeing. And Matt and I get into it. We talk a lot about those festivals and what makes them so special. So there's a link in the description of this episode where you can go follow Matt, keep up to date with everything he's doing, go grab the new album. You gotta grab it. And while you're there, you can follow me as well at Willie Joy or at Back to Back Pod. And the link for the Back to Back Discord is also in that description. Come join the Discord. Come chat with me. I'm in there all the time. I will welcome you. We love new members. We've got a great group of people over there. And we would love to have you come chat, come share your music if you make music. Come just share your thoughts, share your memes. It's all good. Come say hi over at the Discord. But look, today is all about Matt Zoe. It was so great to catch up with him. He and I hadn't really spoken much since the last time he was on this show, which was 2 years ago, almost to the day. It's crazy. It seems like so much has happened in that time. And like you heard me say earlier, I mean, Matt has been busy in the last 2 years. You know, he's a producer's producer. I mean, a guy who I think constantly is inspiring the people around him and the people in our community. And I think for anybody who appreciates what Matt does, I mean, you know why you go to him. It's because he is a unique artist. He has a unique perspective. And that absolutely comes out when you talk to him, when we have these conversations too. If you didn't catch our first episode, go ahead, scroll back in the feed. We go through a lot of his background, his early years in that one. And I have a lot of great memories from that chat too. But it was great to make some new ones with him. I love him. I know you guys do too. And if you love this conversation you hear today, if you love this show, if you like what I'm doing over here at Back to Back, let people know you're listening. Help spread the word. That is the best way to support this show and to help me keep being able to make these episodes for you week after week. Just tag us in your stories. Put up a tweet. Let people know they should be tuning in, recommend a favorite episode. It is all good. I'm at Willie Joy. The show is at Back to Back Pod, like I said. And anytime I see us getting tagged, getting mentioned, I'm always going to be replying to you, reposting, and generally just chatting with you, hanging out. I love to do it, love to talk to you guys, and I hope you love this talk too. Let's get into it right now. This is me and Matt Zoe, Back to Back. Let's go. I was looking it up. It's been like almost weirdly 2 years to the day since we did the last one of these.
Right. Wow. Yeah, it feels a lot longer.
Yeah, it does, right?
Yeah. Wow. Where was that?
That was, you know, I only remember this because it was a weird thing. It was in San Diego where I was living at the time. And we did it in this weird abandoned club that was in the basement of the hotel you were staying at.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I remember. It wasn't even the club that I was playing at.
Right, yeah. Yeah, it was just randomly they had this sort of empty, unused former club in the basement of the hotel. It's so very strange.
That's fun.
Yeah, man. No, absolutely. How have you been since then?
Oh, well. I'm good. I've been good overall.
Good, man. Yeah, I mean, it's been nice. I feel like, although we haven't spoken, I feel like, you know, we've been connected. I see what you're doing online and follow everything you're doing. And it's been awesome, man. I mean, there's a lot to talk about, not even just with the current, you know, insane state of the country and the music industry. But even before then, you were pretty active, man. I feel like on the last couple of years, you've sort of been on a tear for music.
Well, yeah, it certainly feels that way. Making an album, my third album, it was definitely intense.
Is that a good intense or a stressful intense?
No, great intense. I love being absorbed in a project, so yeah, it's great to finally put my brain to doing something bigger.
Sure.
Yeah. Few years I was just doing little projects here and there.
I mean, so now that the project is out there, how do you feel about it? Because you can't delve into it anymore, right?
Well, I've talked to a few people about this, and there seems to be this reoccurring theme that's like once you're finished with a project and put it out, you get this sort of
postpartum.
Postpartum depression. Like you have a barren womb that's, you know, no longer fertile. Yeah, there is this feeling of emptiness after an album release or any big project. You know, it's like raising a child, and once they leave the house, you have the empty nest syndrome.
Yeah, of course. And I mean, I think also there's kind of that annoying thing. I don't know if you've encountered this in you know, doing press for the album or doing promo or anything like that, where immediately people start going, so what's next? You know, right. After this thing you've worked on for years that got released yesterday is out there, it's like all of a sudden nobody even wants to focus on that and take a little time with it.
Right. Yeah. No, I haven't experienced too much of that with this album. There definitely has been that in the past, but I think especially nowadays, people are ready to settle down and stew with something.
Yeah, people got time now.
So yeah, people haven't been rushing me to find out what my next big thing is.
Oh, well, that's good, man. I'll try to keep up that trend.
I mean, I kind of feel like I'm ready to move on to the next thing.
Oh, well, that's good then. Yeah. So, I mean, are you past the postpartum depression a little bit then?
No. No, it's only been what, a week. So,
yeah, it's still super current.
Because, yeah, you go to write something and then it's like, well, I could do anything right now. You know, there's no like direct route that you know you should be taking, so you're just trying out a bunch of different stuff, and it doesn't feel like I have a clear goal at this point.
Well, sure. I mean, for you, are you the kind of person where you're just writing music most of the time regardless, even if you don't know what it's for?
Not really, actually. Most of the time I'm doing sound design that way. Like I'll just make sounds not knowing what it's for. But then when it comes to actually writing music, I'll be a lot more intentional of like what exactly I want to do. and what kind of vibe I want to create.
That's interesting. I mean, I kind of recall the last time we talked on this show, you were talking about, you know, that you really spend a ton of time on sound design and that, you know, that's maybe a happy place for you and just really trying to push those boundaries. Does it work out that you think, like, say, a large amount of time will get spent on sound design, and then sort of once you conceptualize what you want to do next musically, that can be done in a much more condensed period because of kind of all the preparation you've been doing?
Exactly. It just changes the way that I arrange things out. When I have loads of things to work with already and sounds to pick from, it just becomes like creating a collage instead of trying to create a whole fully formed idea from scratch. With, you know, in electronic music, I think sound design is a big part of it, and trying to think about both of those things, like the attitude of the overall song or track versus the details of sound design, I don't think those two mix well together. You know, as soon as you start zooming in on details and stuff, you lose a grasp of the overall picture.
In your experience, do you think that way of working is common, or do you feel like that thought process is a little more rare to you? Because I know a couple other people who work that way, but then I also know plenty of producers who really do just sort of sit down with nothing, and for them the process is just create every single building block while you're sitting there.
Yeah, I mean, it's not uncommon. I know a few people that do it, but yeah, I guess it's more common to arrange things out linearly, and when ideas come to you, you put them down rather than just throwing shit at a wall.
Right. I mean, for me, definitely, yeah. If I'm looking at a blank page and I have nothing in the vault, it's generally not a good place for me to be.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's more common with drum and bass producers to do more of the sound design first, because it's such a big part of that genre. So I think that's something I inherited from that world.
Yeah, that would make total sense. So I listened to just like a couple minutes of the last podcast that we did, just to kind of refresh my mind so I wasn't asking you the exact same questions 2 years later. And one thing I heard in the few minutes I listened to was I asked you this question about where you saw yourself heading in the future, if you had a vision for things happening in the future. And what you said, which was a great answer, was that you wouldn't know what to... You said, I hope that Noisia never goes away, which, of course, now they are. And you generally just said, I don't know what I would do if I didn't have sort of other people in my sphere pushing sound design, other people to look up to and be inspired by in that arena. So yeah. I guess, 2 years later, how are you feeling about sound design, about people pushing boundaries? Are you still finding a lot to be excited about?
Now I have to obviously do more of my own inspiration, conjure more of my own inspiration for sound design as Noisia are splitting up, and there's plenty of great artists out there, like sound design wise. I try now to just like experiment as much as possible. I don't know what else to say about that. Like I'll take some technical idea and try and use that and explore it to its fullest potential, and then inspiration usually comes out of that. I don't really look to other artists as much nowadays for sound design inspiration. I'll try and create my own sounds starting from a technical idea, as I said, usually.
Sure. And those ideas, are you the kind of person where those ideas just pop into your head of like, oh, what if I tried this? Or maybe no one's done that.
Right. Yeah. And it's usually a technical thing. Like, what if I vocode something with something that's vocoded? Like, what if I feed back two vocoders into each other?
Right.
some kind of like, you know, weird nerdy curiosity thing.
Well, I mean, isn't that the way at this point? Maybe it's always been this way, but I think at this point in 2020, that's kind of everything, right? Is the only way to push the boundary at this point, or to be original or do something interesting, is kind of by breaking something or doing something the wrong way, right?
Yeah. Like, I always say it's great to try and copy other people when you're learning something. But then when you're actually trying to create something original, you have to, it has to come from a place of, I wonder what would happen if I did this, instead of like, oh, that sounds cool. How did he do that? A long time, my whole sound design process was trying to figure out how other people made stuff. So yeah, I think I've transitioned into the point where I can find inspiration just from a cool technical idea.
Is it weird to you that there are probably lots of people trying to figure out how you're doing it at this point? And that, you know, where you were to other artists years ago, someone now may be to you?
Yeah, I mean, it's awesome. I love the feeling that I've created a challenge for somebody, and that it's inspired somebody enough to try and copy it.
Mm.
That's an awesome thought.
I think it's true, man. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. I love the idea, because I really put a lot of effort into trying to make things as intricate sounding as possible, using as much randomization and chaos, you know. So in order to make it sound like, how did he do that? And honestly, I wouldn't be able to tell you. A lot of the sound design I do is just completely random. I take a simple idea and then I randomize certain attributes of it to spit out random results.
Hmm. Well, I mean, let's talk about that idea in the context of the new album a little bit, because it's your third album, right? Am I correct? Okay, yeah. So Illusion of Depth, your third album, just released, what, a week ago now. And it's awesome, man. I really love the album. I think it's really interesting. And what I wanted to say to jump off of what you were just talking about is that I think it's a really interesting mixture of that sort of very experimental sound design, but then a lot of it is presented in this context of, you know, maybe a more traditional song format, right? Or a more traditional trance format, or, you know, whatever style the particular songs are. But I think that's something that makes you unique. And I wanted to see if this is something you ever think about, is that there's sort of this hybrid of this high-end sound design mixed with, I don't want to say like pop inclination, but, you know, for sort of marrying the two sides of it. Because I think a lot of times when people just go crazy on the technical sound design side of it, there's almost like an expectation or a pressure from that community that you, if this is, you know, if you're flying this flag, you can't, you know, go in this direction. You can't make something that's too, you know, too mainstream or too whatever, you know, too simple even. And for you, is that something you think about? Is that something you have a push and pull with in your songwriting?
Not really. I mean, when I do crazy sound design, it's always to execute the idea. It's never sound design for the sake of crazy sound design. So whatever happens, the idea always comes first. And, you know, not everything in my projects is crazy sound design. There's a lot of simple stuff going on. And the crazy sound design behind it just makes it all gel together and feel like I spent a really long time on every single patch and lead, when that's not actually the case. Like, I think it's really valuable to mix it up with how detailed you get. So you have some elements that are really super detailed and sound design heavy, and then you have things that are really cheap sounding, and together it creates that contrast. If everything is super detailed and sound design, it sort of takes away from the whole thing.
Yeah, that's beautiful, man. And I completely agree. And I think you make a really good point just about contrast in art in general, right? Is that you can't appreciate one end of it without the other one also being there, right? I mean, that's like that's the classic yin and yang kind of artistic statement. And I only sort of emphasize that to say that I sort of feel like in modern dance music right now, not enough people are thinking about that idea or executing that idea very well.
Maybe. I mean, there's degrees of contrast. You can't have any musical idea without some contrast unless it's just white noise. So,
yeah, well, fair enough.
It's like how much you enhance that contrast, I guess. Definitely, I agree with you, though. There's definitely not enough contrast in music altogether right now. Mm. But yeah, again, it comes back to like why I do intricate sound design is because I want to recreate the feeling and emotions of when all music was made by humans without electronics, you know? And the only way to do that is to inject chaos and randomization into it, because that's what made it human.
Well, and so that's interesting you say that, right? Because if that's what you're going for, I think the dumb person's question after that would be like, well, why are you doing it on a computer then?
That's a perfectly fair question. I don't always do sound design on a computer either. So
sure.
Yeah. With the last album especially, I did a lot more recording with live instruments and stuff. Mm. So
and you play several instruments yourself, right?
Yeah, I play guitar. I wouldn't say I'm a drummer or a bassist, but I do try and
sure. I can't remember if I asked you this the last time we talked, but were you in bands when you were younger?
Yeah, I was in a couple bands, three bands actually.
Okay, what kind of stuff were you playing back then in the young band days?
The first band I was in, we played like jazz funk covers for like middle school students.
Nice.
The second band I was in was like a kind of indie emo rock band, very appropriate from the time, like 2005.
Oh yeah.
And then after that I was like in an instrumental indie rock band, which was actually really cool. I wish we kept going because our rehearsal sessions were really fun for that. But it was all just teenage band stuff.
Oh yeah. I mean, I've had similar things, man. It's not any music I really want anyone else to hear, but I find a lot of value in it personally,
Exactly. Yeah.
and I think having just that mindset and that background, I think that probably affects the choices you make as a professional producer in the studio now, right?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely affects my tastes of what I want to produce, having been in bands. For sure.
Mm. So that reminds me, I have one more quote and then we're done with quotes. But I read a couple recent interviews you had done leading up to the album, and you were talking about Mad Zoo, your label. And you said something I thought was just a really strong, concise statement. Basically, they asked you, like, what is Mad Zoo? What's it all about? And you said, taking electronic music's past and beaming it into the future, Mad Zoo is all about that pre-EDM production mindset and applying it to the sonic landscape of today. Which, to me, that's just an awesome, concise summary. And it makes me think about when you're talking about the band days and, incorporating live instruments and non-traditional sound design. And I wanted to use that to talk a little bit about Mad Zoo, because I know you guys are doing a ton with that as well. With all the online festivals you're doing and a whole bunch of releases, is that also taking up a lot of brain space for you right now?
The festivals are, yeah, for sure. We've actually slowed down a lot on releases. We've got one release coming up this year, and then we actually don't have anything planned after that.
Okay. Was it just a little too much?
Yeah. We all need a little bit of a break. But yeah, the events, we've been doing one almost every month since April.
Wow.
So yeah, it's been a lot. And our next one is next Friday from when we're recording this.
Right.
Yeah, but yeah, it's been really crazy.
I mean, can we talk about for people who don't know, and even for people, I feel like it just needs more explanation, even just for myself. So, I mean, you're throwing these, you know, virtual festivals or whatever you want to call them. Are they all via Minecraft, or do you use different platforms?
Yeah, we use Minecraft, but we have, just for this one moving forward, we have a streaming ticket available, so you can watch it from, I think one of our accounts is going to stream it, and you can then experience the event that way. But yeah, we encourage people to buy Minecraft and experience it in game, because it's pretty nuts.
I mean, can you talk about it a little bit? So I'm very familiar with Minecraft. I know what it is. I have friends who play it. I don't play it. And I'm guessing some of the listeners maybe don't know, if you say a music festival in Minecraft, what is the experience there?
Well, we try to make it as akin to an actual festival experience. So there's shops, there's bars where you can buy normal drinks that don't really do much, but also these things called enhancements that really mess up your visuals. there's a stage, there's DJs, and there's live visuals that are synced to the music. It's pretty much as close to a real event as you can get in a virtual space, I think. I mean, even the VR festivals, the ones that I've seen haven't got like live synced visuals to the music and in-game drugs and stuff.
I mean, yeah, that's insane. And yeah, I think it bears mentioning too that, you know, the people there in that space, I mean, you can interact with your environment, right?
Right, exactly. And each other and the artists playing. It's, you know, as close as it gets, I think.
It's really cool, man. How have, because you've had some really great lineups on these festivals, what's the reaction been from the artists who have done it? Because I have to imagine for a lot of them, it's their first time doing something like this too.
Yeah. I mean, most of them think it's really cool and like can't come away from that experience really excited and saying like, yeah, this is definitely at least an option for the future, you know? Definitely not a replacement for real shows, but yeah, every artist that I've talked to about it has been really positive.
And real shows, man, I think that's something that's on everybody's mind and has been for a while, but is getting more insistent as venues more and more shutting down. And for you too, I have to imagine it must be a bit odd to have your plans changed a little bit. I assume you knew you had an album coming up. I'm sure there were thoughts of touring it, thoughts of, stepping up that side of it probably more than you had in a couple of years. How did all those plans evolve? Were you able to do some shows before everything shut down?
Luckily, I got to do one album show before the pandemic hit. The whole point of doing this album was that I wanted to finally have an album that was focused on a live show and have, you know, a time-coded light and visual show and have all these things that I never really focused on before.
Yeah.
To do one of the shows at at the Academy here.
Oh, nice.
In LA. And yeah, it was really awesome. I'm so glad I got to do just that last one. That was actually the last one at the Academy before everything shut down. So I really was lucky to get man. That one.
Well, that's good, man. I have to imagine. Yeah, it must have been a bit frustrating at the start there too, especially if it's an album you meant to be presented live.
Yeah, very, very frustrating. And still to this day, very frustrating. But with these Minecraft shows, I feel a little bit less annoyed because I feel really lucky that I get to play any shows at all, virtual or not, and have it look cool and have there be time sync visuals and stuff. Because that's all I really wanted in the first place. It's just a really cool visual show to go along with the album.
Well, and that's actually maybe worth pointing out too, is I think another thing that makes what you're doing a little different from other live stream events is that you're selling tickets, and I have to assume somewhat successfully selling tickets, which is kind of amazing in that I think the common conversation, what I always hear when people bring up live stream events is, you know, it's like a cool replacement, but there's no money in it. There's no way to make money. People don't want to spend money on it. And I think a lot of people would sort of just dismiss it out of hand that way. And so it's kind of amazing to see, man. It's sort of a hopeful note in a less than hopeful time to see you selling tickets and having people buy it and show up and have a great time.
Yeah, it's definitely hard to get people convinced that they should buy a ticket to a show in a game that they have to buy. But yeah, everybody that has done has all said that it was completely worth it. They felt like they had a real festival experience. And that's all that matters to me, as long as people come away from it feeling like they had a good time. But I don't think we could survive on just ticket sales alone.
Sure.
Like, wasn't for our sponsors, we probably wouldn't be able to do it to the scale that we're doing.
I mean, that makes total sense, and I think you're not alone in that. You know, it's interesting. I think every artist, every entity, anyone in our space is kind of looking to see what brands are out hanging out right now, because we all gotta make it through one way or another. I don't know, man. It's such a strange time, and we don't have to go too far down this road. But, you know, I've seen recently there are a few states that are just straight up doing like regular shows in clubs with, you know, no particular distancing, bad mask wearing, all that. And I don't know, man. I get the argument that like we have to eventually move back and figure out a way to do this safely, but I don't know if that's it, man.
Yeah, no, I don't think that's going to end well.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've been looking at like the projections for COVID-19.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It looks like no matter what happens after January, there's going to be a massive second wave.
Yeah.
That's what all the predictions are saying. So I don't know how this is all going to end up, but yeah, it's obviously really important to get people back doing their jobs and in clubs and stuff. But yeah, I don't think doing it this soon it's going to make it take way longer to recover.
I mean, that's the real issue, right? Is I'm very of two minds, because on the one hand, you know, I can't. Realistically, with my careers and my experience, I understand the feeling of, well, I gotta take this show, or I gotta take this paycheck, or all, you know, any of that, because I've been in those situations in my life. But you're completely right that every time someone does that, it's kind of setting the rest of us back. And it's that classic prisoner's dilemma problem.
Yeah. And I think there's going to be more popping up, because like that Chainsmokers show that happened.
Yeah.
I saw that they only got fined like 20 grand, which is nothing.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. The promoters got fined 20 grand, which I'm sure they made much more than that.
They probably got paid more than that. So yeah, it's probably going to become a massive problem in the future. We'll see.
Yeah. I think you're right, man. I mean,
I'm pretty pessimistic about everything. I think that's part of why I started doing virtual events, because I was like, oh, that's all going to shit.
Yeah. I don't disagree with you, man. I'm not in a great headspace about where it's at right now.
Yeah, I'm really thankful that I have a team of people that are able to do something that, you know, gets at least a few people through this.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And like you said, that's a silver lining, right? Is you wouldn't have been doing this otherwise. It's kind of a beautiful thing in that it, at least 5-10 years in the future, when we look back at this, you know, this is, it's going to be a unique experience that, you know, we all kind of had together, and you and the Mad Zoo community and all the people who follow what you do, you know, you were all there together. You all shared that. And, you know, in the end, those experiences are kind of all we're going to have, right?
Yeah, exactly. As long as I created a shared common experience for a bunch of people, then that's all I care about. Seems to be doing the job. So
absolutely. I mean, how are you doing just in general? Like all that stuff aside, you know, you've got a brand new album out, you're doing these events, but then also the world is insane and everything is scary. Are you, you know, on a day-to-day basis, how are you doing, man? Are you all right?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes yes, sometimes no. I mean, I'd be lying if I said, like, yeah, I just breeze through it all. And like some days I don't want to get out of bed because it's really fucking terrible.
Yeah, same.
So yeah, I think everyone listening can relate. Like it's hard. Like even if you have some kind of support mechanism, or you, if you still have your job, just seeing what's going on is hard.
Yeah.
Like, let alone the worrying about your own future, like just worrying about the future.
Yeah.
and just like not having a clear vision of the future that isn't grim and dark.
Yeah. And,
yeah. It's hard. It's psychologically taxing to anybody. But with the added fact of shit, I might, you know, be broken in a year or two.
Right. Right. Yeah. So yeah. So I mean, it's existential and it's personal, right?
Right. Exactly. So it's like being attacked from two sides, and you know, I'd be surprised if anybody told me right now that yeah, I'm fine.
Oh yeah. No. I mean, that's like a hilarious joke at this point if somebody says that. I think also, what you said about just not knowing what the future looks like is very stressful, especially for something like what we're doing. Because and I've been talking to other people about this, because we're all, I think everyone's sort of finding their way back to creativity in one way or another, but it's sort of hard to know what we're making stuff for right now. And you know, the context and the structures that we've relied on our whole careers are gone, and we don't know if they're coming back. If they do, we don't know what form it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Have you found it differently writing music, sitting down to create?
Absolutely. At the very start of the pandemic, I had this big wave of inspiration. I was writing a lot. And then, yeah, it hit me. It's like, what am I doing this for? Like, I try to be intentional with what I make, and, you know. So, yeah, you have to find your own reason, whether that's just like because you love producing and you feel depressed when you haven't made a track, or, you know, you create the environment in which you play it, like I'm doing, or a bit of both.
Mm.
So yeah, as I said, I'm really grateful that I have something to make edits for and make.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. So for you, it's finding the intention and finding the, even if it's on a, you know, a shorter timeline, finding the purpose of the creativity is kind of what's the driving factor.
Yeah, finding it or creating it yourself. Like, yeah. Mm. Exactly.
Yeah, that's a great note, man. I never really thought about it in those terms, but that's actually a really good way to look at it. Now that you've got this album out, maybe you'll find some more of those too. You know, that frees up some time. Although I'm sure you're now, of course, also doing a bunch of album press and promo and that kind of stuff. Do you enjoy that aspect of it? You know, after the creation is done, now you got to go tell people about it.
Honestly, it's been good this time. Sometimes it's like, you know, you do a lot of interviews that are questions like, what's your favorite track of all time?
Yeah, man.
Yeah, those album campaigns are fun. But this album campaign's been really good. All the people I've spoken to have really interesting questions, and I don't mind talking about stuff like this. And yeah, this one's been good. Usually I do hate doing press, yeah. But I think these times have just made people a little bit more introspective, I guess, or that they don't just look for mindless content as much anymore. I feel like it's people are looking for meaning, and I think that comes with being interviewed. People are asking more interesting questions.
Well, that's good to hear, man. I mean, you actually just made me think of, you know, maybe that's, I wonder if we're almost reaching some kind of like loop back point with the way our brains interact with all the content that's out in the world, because we're so inundated now with meaningless content, you know, whether it's political ads or whether it's, you know, viral videos or any of that. I think right now there's more of all of that stuff than there's ever been. But I wonder if it's to the point where it's just so much that people are when something, you know, deeper or more introspective or just something with a little more depth comes across your feed or your field of view, maybe people are latching onto that more.
Definitely a lot of that, but maybe also like the fact that it's not relevant anymore. Like all, like yes. a lot of it doesn't bear any resemblance to what's actually happening in reality anymore. And it never did, but right. Now even right. More so.
Well, yeah, sure. I mean, that's, you know, even down to sort of the micro of people's day-to-day lives. I mean, you know, if you're on the train going to work and you have a 15-minute commute, then sure, it's great to, you know, scroll a couple funny videos and, you know, retweet some stupid thing you see, and then you're at work and your day continues. But, you know, when you're sitting here for 12 hours, it's the proposition is a little different.
Exactly. Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit more about the album, man, because I think there's some connections there as well. It's a return for you to a few things from your past, right? Return to Anjuna Beats. You know, why now? Is there something you can point to of why this was sort of appropriate for you to do now? Why it felt good to do this now?
Yeah, I think my whole musical career, I've been trying to sort of explore new sounds and find and, you know, get as far away from where I started as possible. But now I feel like I've explored a lot, and revisiting the things that got me excited about producing in the first place, I think that produced better music because it put me in that mindset of when I was like 12 or 13, first discovering my DAW and, you know, just getting really excited about sitting down in front of it. So I think that's what it came down to, is whatever made me most excited, somewhat to do with nostalgia, I guess.
Yeah, which is, you know, I think personally, that's sort of what drives a ton of my production decisions and everything I'm trying to do on my best days. But I think also it reminds me of your quote that I said earlier about sort of taking the pre-EDM production mindset of yesteryear and trying to sort of warp that into the future. And I think you achieve that really well on the album. But, you know, for you, is there something about your, even for you creatively, like your early production style or ideas you were trying out at the time, is there an appeal to sort of go back to like a more primitive or a younger version of yourself and see how you can sort of recontextualize that?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's exactly what the album was, is trying to go back into my younger self and take all the knowledge that I've learned and put it into what I would have wanted to make back then. I think this is for everybody. The moment that their discovery period is always the most like romantic part of their whole existence.
Yeah.
They always look back to then for inspiration. I don't think it's any different for anybody. That was the time where you had the most emotional reaction to the music you were making. Mm. I feel like that's just it. It's like you're more sensitive to music in general, but especially to whatever you make. Like the time when you would make anything, and if it wasn't just complete noise, it would sound amazing to you.
Right.
capturing that excitement of really enjoying the process and the result, even if the result looking back was a bit terrible.
Yeah, 100%. And I mean, also it's a return to you, a return for you to Anjuna Beats. But I thought it was an interesting choice for the album, because I think your album doesn't exactly sound like a lot of what they put out. And so, you know, for you, obviously you have a relationship with them, you know them, they know you, but when you're turning in these songs, what was the reaction from the label? How was it working with them on a project like this?
They were really excited about whatever I sent them. So it was great. They were looking, I think that's why they wanted to sign my next album, is because they wanted to push their sound a little bit more. And to me, it's more in line with Anjuna Beats than anything I've ever done. Sonic. So it made sense to me.
Well, I think you captured the spirit of it, right? And I think that this is what we've been talking about, right? It's that sort of bigger concept, the feeling of it, the vibe of it.
Right. And if you look back in the Anjuna Beats catalog, when they started, their sound was all over the place. And I think that's really the heart of Anjuna Beats, is this varied technical styles, but all with the same emotional quality. Mm. I wouldn't say the same emotion, but yeah, everything is really emotional.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. And you did a mix for them too, right? That was sort of a retrospective of their catalog.
Yep.
How was that, man? Yeah. That must have been fun to kind of go through memory lane a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. A ton of stuff on that compilation that like really affected me musically growing up. Just, you know, my music would sound different if it weren't for those tracks. So yeah, it was great to be able to do that.
In all of this, what I'm thinking about is we're in this time that we've talked about where there's a lot of uncertainty, but there's also a lot of potential for experimentation and new ideas and people having a few seconds to breathe, right? And to think about what they're doing and to think about the intentionality of why they're doing it. For me, it makes me think about sort of the state of the whole thing right now. And I guess what I want to talk about just for a second is sort of what do we do with EDM at this point? Because I think there's been for years this sort of sense from the artist community that a lot of this is kind of, I don't want to say boring necessarily, but just sort of not progressive and sort of just, you know, kicking the can down the road or pushing the ball forward, whatever you want to call it, and not very risky, if that's fair. And now we're in a time where I think, while we're all at home, I'm seeing a lot more people taking risks, doing interesting projects and ideas. But I, perhaps like you, I'm kind of pessimistic that if and when things get back to normal, that feeling is going to stay with us.
Hmm.
I don't know. What do we do with it, man?
Yeah. As I said before, it's all about the context of where you're listening to things. EDM makes sense at a festival or at a club when you're drunk. And party music. But yeah, right now there's no fun parties. So the people making EDM will naturally start making more heady kind of music, I think. Just because that's the format that people are listening nowadays.
Sure.
You know, if shows resume, EDM will probably survive that. The only thing, like, I always think back to like the disco sucks movement and think, could that ever happen to EDM? I don't know.
Well, it's certainly not the pop powerhouse that it was maybe 5 years ago. You know, I think the mainstream sound of pop flirted with EDM for a few years, but I think that's moved on a bit.
Yeah. Now it's, I mean, to me, EDM and hip hop are very, very close to the same thing at this point.
What do you mean by that? That's an interesting statement.
In terms of like production sensibility, and there's a lot of overlap with hip hop and electronic music now.
I take a lot of inspiration from the hip hop production. I'd actually be curious sort of what outside of electronic music you listen to just in general. I'm not saying like what inspires you, but yeah, for me, I mean, I get super inspired because listening to hip hop, the really exciting stuff, the stuff being made by the young people, it's sort of what we were talking about earlier, that they don't always know all the rules. And so they don't even know that they're breaking half the rules. And that is so exciting to me, who at this point knows too many rules.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, for me, it's the same. I've been listening to more like modern hip hop more recently. Like before, I was pretty like, hip hop kind of died in 2010 for me.
Mm.
But nowadays I'm being like a lot more open for it. My favorite hip hop producers are like Madlib and Dilla and kind of, you know, that kind of sound.
Yeah.
Non-electronic, I listen to so much, from everything from rock to like Turkish funk from the 70s to to pop even. Like I'm not ashamed to say it. Like I do listen to almost everything.
Is music on frequently when are you someone who listens to a lot of music?
Not really, actually. I actively listen to music, so I don't have it on passively as much.
Mm, I'm the same way, actually.
Yeah, I notice a lot of producers are like that as well, because it's hard to do something and have music playing when you want to pay attention to the music.
Right.
And if you don't pay attention to the music, then chances are you don't want to listen to it.
Yeah, is it tough for you to just, if something's on, you can't stop analyzing it?
Right. I mean, sometimes I'll put on those lo-fi hip-hop 24-hour. Those are actually good. I mean, as terms of like background music. But yeah, I don't really have background music that much. I like to actively listen to things, so it's not like on all the time in my house.
Right. That makes sense. And it's interesting because I never thought about this. What you just said is that really is an art form in and of itself, right? Is making background music that's well made and, you know, pleasing to listen to, but really is unobtrusive, doesn't get in the way of, you know, your thought process.
Yeah, I love that challenge. I've tried to make stuff like that before, and it's really difficult. Like to make something that washes over you and you don't even notice is really difficult.
Mm.
And yeah, that's what the whole skill of scoring music is for, like TV and film, is doing that, exactly that, of trying to make something that you don't even notice, but gives you an emotion.
Yeah, yeah, and that it's like a multimedia thing, right? Where when all of the elements come together, it creates this experience, but you can't really point to one or the other of why it sort of feels the way it feels.
Yeah, exactly. So I love those little lo-fi hip-hop channels because it's full of great music that does exactly that, just washes. Just on in the background. It's nice.
Well, I mean, that makes me think about what you were talking about earlier with the live show and the Minecraft experiences and sort of building out the visual side of how you're presenting these songs and making it into sort of a a more full experience where it's not just the music, right? Do you work with visuals? I mean, I know, I think we talked about, you know, you draw and other things. How involved were you on the visual side?
I actually drew the flyer for this. So yeah, I put a lot more visuals skills into this last Minecraft event. And also the visual, like VJ stuff, I do all of that as well.
Oh, okay. So, you're doing the whole thing.
Yeah, exactly. I trigger it with a MIDI keyboard and my actual keyboard.
Were you planning on doing live visuals, you know, for like shows, like tour shows? Are you thinking about that?
Yeah. I mean, I've got this big project with Kill the Noise. And for that, one of our ideas is on stage, we would have loads of visual equipment to mess around with, and in addition to or even instead of the audio stuff. Hmm. So yeah, that's always something I've wanted to do for sure.
It's funny, man. Another little snippet I heard of the last conversation we had 2 years ago was we were talking about working with Jake and how you liked working with Jake and your guys' whole history. And then you were saying basically, yeah, I've got this big project with him. I can't talk about it. But it's got to be a weird feeling too to have that sort of culminating and then not know what to do with it.
Yeah, I mean, it's good though to have that in our back pocket for when touring resumes. But yeah, it's definitely going to be something for when touring resumes.
Mm. So you guys are thinking about it as a live experience?
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah, it has to be. That's what we wanted to do from the get-go.
I'm sort of curious if that was the idea from the get-go. How does that affect the writing process and, you know, how you sort of conceptualize the whole project?
Jake's a genius arranger and he always thinks about that regardless. He always has some kind of visual image in his mind when he's arranging out a track. Like, you'll see him close his eyes and like, visualize. And yeah, that's a huge part of it. It's just part of the way he works. And I think I've adapted a lot of it as well from working with him.
That's cool, man. You think that's something you have picked up a little bit and brought into your own writing?
Well, yeah, it's definitely made me care about it more. Sure. Before, I used to be the kind of producer that would think, I'll make the music and care about the visuals later, maybe.
I think it's nice in times like this to have something to look forward to and just, you know that at some point undetermined in the future, something cool is going to happen.
Right. Exactly. So yeah, we could, start putting things out, but again, we decided against it just because, yeah, for that exact reason. We want something to look forward to after all this is over, because I think what we made is pretty timeless. I don't think it's going to expire anytime soon. Yeah.
That's awesome.
I'm really, really stoked about that one.
Is there anyone else you're working with right now? Anything else going on outside of just your own writing?
Yeah. I'm still writing more stuff with Olin, who's featured heavily on the album.
She's great.
Yeah, and we're writing a bunch of stuff for a completely different project than the Matt Zoe project or the Olin project. We're trying to start a little band. What else am I doing?
That's great, man. Back to the band days.
Yeah. I don't want to say too much about it, but Imogen Heap hit me up yesterday and asked to work with me. So
yeah, that's great.
It was just a little bit of like,
ah. And, have you had other moments like that where, somebody you probably listened to when you were younger, you've worked with them, and any other experiences like that?
Yeah, I was working with 311 a couple of years ago.
Really?
Similar, yeah.
I did not know that. What? Tell me about that.
So I wrote a track for their album. Basically, we at the time, my management were under the same management company as their management. And yeah, I had the song lying around that I wanted somebody else to sing and write, yeah, they got a hold of it and they really loved it. And yeah, eventually we agreed to work on it. And yeah, I was going back and forth from Nick Hexum's studio, getting all the takes. And yeah, it was really cool because, yeah, I was definitely a fan, a childhood fan.
Oh, that's so cool, man. So, I mean, were they sort of translating what I assume was sort of your original production into, you know, a 311 song, basically?
Pretty much. And yeah, trying to keep as many of my sonic elements in there as well. But yeah.
That's cool. What's the song called?
Don't You Worry.
Don't You Worry. All right. I got to listen to that after we get off the call here. But that's cool. So you were able to keep some cool sound design elements and other flourishes in there?
Yeah. I wanted to have a little bit more say in the process, but in the end, it's a band and it's like, you know, four against one.
Right. And of course, a band that's had such a history like 311, I'm sure at a certain point, they just kind of say what they want to do. And
yeah, there's not much you can do. But I was kind of annoyed at the first when I heard the final version out or the final, they send me the master or no, they sent me the final mix. And I was like, oh, really? I really do some more stuff to this. But then I heard the final master. I was like, okay, fine. I think mastering is just a much more involved process in that kind of music. And it makes a lot more difference in rock than electronic. Cause if I hear a mix that sounded like that, I would not think the final map.
Well, I mean, maybe that, do you think that's due to the fact that I think in modern production techniques for dance music, especially a lot of the younger producers, they're kind of mastering as they go.
Yeah, it's part of the process. Yeah.
And I guess for bands, it's interesting. I don't know if you know any more about this than me, but I, you know, there's so many legendary rock producers who have made, you know, a lot of the albums I loved as a kid and I know are still working to this day. But I wonder if there's also sort of a new crop of rock producers or metal producers who are using newer techniques. I never really thought about that.
There definitely are. I mean, if there aren't, there wouldn't be so many YouTube channels that are catered for them.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, they must be out there. Because, you know, people say rock is dead and whatnot, but I don't think live music will ever be dead. Like recording live instruments will never be dead. So whatever style of music people produce, rock production will always be relevant.
I think you're right. And I think, you know, you were drawing comparisons between hip hop and dance music earlier. I think, you know, you can start to do that between rock and dance music as well. There's plenty of new rock albums, rock songs that are produced much closer to what a dance music song sounds like sonically, you know?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. For better or for worse.
Yeah, it's not always successful. Although I will say, though, man, when it's good, like I think it was last year when Sonny Skrillex, like his old band, released a few new songs that he had clearly, you know, heavily produced himself. And I mean, those things were monsters. Like it was like this wall of sound in a way I really hadn't heard out of a band before, and the possibilities there. I mean, obviously it's Skrillex, so it's going to be very good, but you know, the possibilities for what other people could do with it. I remember my mind was kind of swirling at the time.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's so many possibilities now. So many ways you can manipulate guitar sounds, and yeah, I just think live music's never going to go away completely. And bands, I think just the energy of seeing musicians on stage isn't going to go away. So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, maybe that's like the galaxy brain idea, man, of where we're heading is that, you know, it's been the classic problem forever. It's like, you're a headlining DJ, but what do you do on stage? Right. And, you know, you just stand there and, you know, if you're lucky, you have some fancy visuals. But, and the rock band on the other end of the spectrum, very entertaining to look at, but for a long time maybe couldn't compete sonically on the big level. But yeah, man, maybe we're heading towards some kind of marriage of that.
Absolutely. I feel like we've already reached it in the past with groups like Soul Wax.
Yeah.
And, you know, Rammstein even was a great example.
Oh, I love that you said that. 100%. Yeah.
I absolutely love Rammstein because it's such a great marriage of electronic and rock. Some people say they're cheesy and whatnot, but I don't find them cheesy at all.
I love them, man. Yeah. They're incredible. And I love that they're still relevant in this day and age. Like, they're still putting out music that I actually like.
Right. Exactly. And that's rare.
Oh, so rare. Is that something that's been on your mind with this project, with the band project a little bit, of sort of how you can bring, you know, whatever those production touches are to whatever the sound is going to be?
Exactly. Yeah. That was the whole goal. I would never try and just make a band and throw away everything I've learned for the last 18 years. So yeah, I no matter what I do, it'll always have some kind of electronic element, no matter what. So
yeah. And I guess we are seeing, I mean, you know, there's plenty of great artists right now that do it to one extent or another, like San Hollow, I think, is really great in that space. I don't know. Do you know Jaron? J-A-R-O-N?
Maybe.
I'll send you some of his stuff after we get off this, man. I think you would really like it. And he's always been great, but recently he's moved much more into sort of the, you know, he's singing, he's playing guitar, but it's still, the production is really, really wild.
Yeah, it's cool because not only is like the sound being pushed, but also it's a lot easier for people to access the tools to make good rock music. Mm. Now you don't even need a drum kit. You can just get Superior Drummer or Addictive Drums and process them in a way that sounds, you know, live and natural. It's never been easier to make your own rock record.
That's right, a great now. Point too. Yeah. For anybody out there who's intrigued by this conversation, is you can do it yourself.
Yeah,
and exactly. I think actually people would be surprised to find out how some very live sounding records were actually programmed.
Absolutely. Even some of the 90s ones, they were still using tape, but all the guitar sounds were all like DI guitars, and like it was all very electronic production, so to speak.
Right. Yeah. They weren't all playing it in the room at the same time.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. To say the least.
I don't want to take up too much more of your time, but I want to make sure we just, again, mention the album and that I think it's great. And I think everybody should go listen to it. What are you looking forward to now, other than the cool shit we talked about already?
I'm looking forward to some time off after this Minecraft festival. I've got about 2 months or 3 months even where I don't have any plans. So it's going to be nice to relax and hopefully get out of LA for a bit and have a bit of a holiday because I need it.
That'd be good, man. Do you know where you're going to go?
Yeah, I think I'm going to drive up to Oregon or something. My manager moved up there shortly after the pandemic. So yeah, he's got a place up there.
Yeah, I was just talking to Danny the other day, man. I love Danny.
Yeah, he's great.
His house out there looks amazing. And I was really glad it did not burn down when his neighborhood was going up in flames.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he has had a very stressful few months.
That's what it seems like, man. I my thoughts go out to him because he's such a good dude.
Yeah, absolutely. He deserves to be happy. So
he does, man. It's funny that he moved out there because a couple of years ago, my manager moved out to Oregon. And he's since come back to LA, but at the time, I think it was such a head scratcher for so many people of sort of, you know, this is what you do, but you're just going out to Oregon. And, you know, there's like that weird pressure of like, oh, you got to stay here. You know, you won't be connected.
Yeah. If only they could see a few years later how little truth there is in that.
Oh, yeah, man. And how really like, removing yourself from the sort of the whatever you want to call it, that's LA, oftentimes is like the best thing you could do.
Absolutely. At least, yeah. I mean, maybe I'll permanently move away one day, but it's nice just getting away for a few weeks and then coming back to this smoggy.
Right. I mean, there's plenty to love too, right? It's a love-hate thing.
But yeah, I kind of like the dirtiness. Yeah, the struggle of LA. It's inspiring.
Yeah. There's a romantic quality to it, I think. And kind of knowing that anyone you see on the street could be going through that struggle right now.
Yeah, we're all weathered people in some way.
I love that, man. That's a beautiful thought. That, yeah, it's actually a community of people, even if not everyone is aware of it. But it's great to see you, man. I'm glad we get to connect. I was shocked to learn that it had been 2 years since we talked, because I don't know, I feel connected to you. I like seeing what you're doing just on social media, all that. And yeah, man, the album's great. I'm glad to see you active and excited. And I'm always looking forward to what you're going to do, man.
Yeah, thanks. It's always a joy. Pardon the
Oh, you.
Always happy to be back on the podcast.
Awesome, man. Well, thanks for doing it. It's great to see you, man.
Thank you.
All right. Peace. All right, that's the show. Shout out to Madzo. Great to have you back on, man. Always a pleasure. You're always welcome. For everybody out there listening, I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. Don't forget, Illusion of Depth, the new album from Madzo. It's out right now on Anjuna Beats. You got to go grab it. It's incredible. There's a link in the description of this episode where you can go follow Matt. Get the music. Keep up to date with everything he's doing, the Minecraft festivals, everything. You can follow me as well at Willie Joy or at Back2BackPod. BackToBackPod@gmail.com is the email address. And also in the description is a link to the Back2Back Discord server. That's the best way to get in touch with me. That's the best way to say hi. I'm always there, always around, chatting with people. Great group of people. So come through, join us, post up some music, and yeah, let's hang. Come do it. That's it for this week. It is a beautiful day over here. I'm going to go get outside. I'm going to soak up some sun. So if it's nice where you are, I suggest you do the same. Go outside, do something fun, be safe, wear a mask, stay away from people. But, you know, don't neglect your health, whether it's mental or physical. You got to take care of yourself. You got to take care of the people around you. On that note, I love all you guys out there. I've got some great episodes coming up in the next month. I think you're really going to dig it. Love hanging out with you guys here every week. It has really kept me going. I hope you're enjoying the ride as well. So much more to come. That's it. Have a great week, a great weekend, and I will talk to you next Tuesday. For Back to Back, this is Willie Joy. Peace.